Hello, and welcome to this edition of the FAIR Data Podcast, where we discuss all things FAIR, making data findable, accessible, interoperable, and reusable. I'm Rory McNeil, host of the FAIR Data Podcast, and my guest today is Lena Karvaskaya. Lena is Community Manager for RDM and Open Science in the Library at the Free University of Amsterdam. Lena, welcome. It's great to have you on the podcast.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Okay. So before we get into your current activities at the Free University, could you tell us a bit about how you first got interested in RDM and open science?
Sure. I was thinking about this. I think I initially got interested in the topics without realizing that they are called RDM and open science. When I was a student, I was involved, like I studied linguistics, and I got very fascinated by documentation of endangered languages. You know, there are like languages, there are many languages in the world, and speakers of some languages decide not to pass their this language to their children, and then the language eventually disappears. So first, when I was like studying in Moscow, one of our teachers had projects where she went to Siberia, to the Arctic Circle, to make recordings of the last speakers of such languages. And as a student, I joined and was super fascinated by that. Later, I went to Germany to do my master's, and I worked as a student assistant in several projects that were doing language documentation. Germany was a great place for this, specifically for language documentation, because there was a lot of funding from Volkswagen Foundation for documentation of endangered languages. And in this area of linguistics, there was a lot of awareness that the data that we are recording, or you know, with the video recordings that we are making, or the audio recordings that we are making, are very important, that they should be preserved for a long time, and also made accessible for the relevant people. And who are the relevant people? This was also a very interesting question, because other researchers might be interested in looking at the data, but also the people from the language community, because even if people don't speak the language anymore, they are still interested in what the language looked like. So there was also this component of how to make this data valuable and accessible for various groups, and what to do if you're working with a non-academic community which doesn't have access to good internet access, for example. And the whole idea that, you know, that your files should be stored in a certain way, organized in a good way, that the documentation is important, otherwise nobody will be able to do anything with your data. This was very present there. So I think this is something I got interested in from my student times.
Well, that's absolutely fascinating. I have to say, this is very dangerous, because I don't have any professional interest in this topic, but I have a strong, and this in particular, personal interest in the topic through my involvement with communities in the Hebrides that speak Scottish Gaelic, which is happily, as I wouldn't say it's dying, but it's definitely all the challenges that you mentioned are there, and also the recording. So maybe we'll have another conversation about that next time we meet. I have to control myself so we don't talk about that the whole time, but that's really interesting. Okay, fantastic. So then, and then was Utrecht University, was that your first actual role in RDM, where you transitioned to being, you know, focused on RDM as opposed to the language study?
Yeah, so I came to the Netherlands to do my PhD in linguistics, and for my PhD, I didn't collect my own data from endangered languages. I decided to use data from other studies and do a big comparative study. So after the PhD, I started to look for opportunities to stay at the university, and I saw that the field of research data management is growing, specifically in the Netherlands. So I was very fortunate to find a job at the Utrecht University Library, and my role was a data manager.
And what did that involve?
The idea was that I'm helping various projects, research project or projects or internal infrastructure projects with their data management questions. One really big project that was going on in Utrecht was called Use, and this was a large scale longitudinal cohort study where they were collecting data from children. Yeah, like basically from children till adolescents and doing all kinds of experiments with them. So this was a huge collaboration between different institutions, and they had a lot of infrastructure in place and they had work for data managers. So that was a great way to get familiar with the field. And
okay. There. Interesting. Okay, so that was a transition. And then now you move to the Free University, and what are you doing at the Free University? What's your role there?
So my role is a community manager for research data management and open science. And what I do is I try to share knowledge in the broad sense of a word. I try to share knowledge to facilitate knowledge sharing between colleagues involved in the topic. So within the support, the administration part of the university, there are various departments which are one way or another involved in research data management and open science. For example, if you do something with research data management, very quickly you will end up with some legal questions. Same with open science. There are a lot of legal questions involved, so you need help from the legal department. Similarly, you really need help from the IT department, because a lot of solutions that we are offering our IT solutions. So we can, as a library, we cannot do this on their own. These are topics that don't have one authority. And my role is to facilitate this knowledge exchange where different departments actually know what's going on, why it's important, what is the whole ecosystem looking like.
Oh, that's really interesting. So, because when I heard the term community manager, I was more thinking that the definition of community would be the researchers, the research community.
This is the second part of what you're doing, but
you're also doing the kind of organizational community as well. That's interesting, yeah.
Yeah, so actually a huge chunk of my work is really organizational community. I also do a lot of outreach to researchers. Uh-huh. And I guess this is also the nice part about my role, that I combine both. Because what's happening in the organization, and I also have some understanding of what researchers need, and try to do something for them, you know.
That's really interesting. I think that's nice. I mean, oftentimes I think the two things are not brought together. So it's great that you have this kind of, you know, linking role. That's excellent.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So you say you're open science and RDM. So how do you and others at the Free University think about open science and RDM? Do you think of one as a subset of the other? Are they different? They're obviously somewhat different, but they also complement each other. So how do you, in your kind of understanding of things, how do they fit together?
Well, we do see RDM as a fundament for open science. Open science is much broader, but if you know, if your data is not organized in a good way, it's difficult to make something open, right? So it's more of a fundamental thing. I think also one interesting thing about how researchers perceive it, I think most researchers are interested in RDM because they want to contribute to open science. So when I talk to researchers, I usually don't come with an RDM flag, you know, research data management for the sake of research data management. I usually come with broader ideas of open science, that we want to make science better. We stand for values like transparency and equity and inclusion. While for support staff, of course, there are people within support who see their role in research data management, but not necessarily in the broader open science.
Okay, that's really interesting too. So you think of RDM as being kind of an enabler, an enabling infrastructure, but it in terms of most or many researchers, it's better if it's left as behind this, you know, under the surface, behind the scenes, as something yes. that they it's just there, and they can help them to achieve open science. That's really interesting.
Yeah.
I find there's a I think my experience with researchers is similar to yours, but I do find that there are some researchers who are actually a bit more aware of the fundamental role that the infrastructure plays. And as you said, without the infrastructure, you can't really make the data very open. And there are some researchers who actually find that interesting as well. I think in my experience, there are some exceptions these are passionate open science advocates. So it's not that they don't believe in open science, but they understand the linkage in a way.
Yeah.
Whereas, as you say, many researchers, they don't really care or they're not interested. Or
all researchers want to do their work well. You know, all researchers want to have their data organized, you know, want to have their data organized in a nice, in a good way and, you know, make the best work possible. But I think if you want to start a conversation, it's good to start, you know, with the values and then dive into, you know, the exact technical implementations instead of the other way around.
Yeah. So we met at the Open Science Festival at Erasmus University back in late August a couple of months ago. What were your main takeaways from the festival?
Well, this was an amazing opportunity to meet so many people. I think the engagement at the festival was great. What caught my mind was that there were a lot of topics where people really wanted to dive deeper into them, and not so many opportunities for that. Mm. For example, we were organizing a session on engaging inclusive and open events, and then people said, and some of the participants were, you know, really struggling how to work together with patient organizations.
Hmm.
You know, how to make events like the Open Science Festival open for patient organizations, which makes it very specific. You know, if you have.
Hmm.
If you have this group that you want to involve with open science, you have to look very specifically of where, like, the intersection of the interest lies. You know, if you would just invite them to the Open Science Festival, they probably would not feel that it's inclusive and open because it's not addressing the questions that are relevant for them.
Mm.
But I think that there were many things like that where it feels that we have enough of agreement on the general things about open science, but the exact ways it should be done there on there, these things need much more thorough discussion and work, and it would be great to have some venues for that, I guess.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Yeah, I just came back from, I was at the RDA plenary in Salzburg last week. So certainly I think that's an excellent forum for a deeper dive into some of these issues. And yeah, I guess the Open Science Festival also, it's only a day long. So there's a limit to how much you can do. And also its scope is quite broad. So
yes, open science is broad, while RDA is, of course, a research data alliance. So it is already narrowing it down to research data.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, yeah. So, well, I mean, the Open Science Festival, the Netherlands is one of the leading centers. In my mind, it's the leading center for innovation in open science, RDM, data stewardship, pretty much all of this stuff. And the Open Science Festival is a great example. And looking from the outside, where I live in the UK, it's easy to be jealous about the Netherlands because it looks like such an amazing ecosystem. So could you give us some insight from the inside about what it's like to be working in that environment? You know, for example, are there lots of opportunities in addition to the Open Science Festival to share experiences with RDM Open Science with people who are involved from other universities?
Yeah. It's interesting, yes. I don't often have an opportunity to think of how it looks from the outside, of course. we do have a lot of knowledge exchange because it's a small country, the distances are small. You can easily meet your colleagues and, collaborate on various topics. For example, for I think it's already 4 years that in October, several universities joined forces to organize something fun around Halloween. So we call it, it's a self-proclaimed the Data Horror Week.
Okay.
That's one of the topics I like, this idea that not everything goes well, but we can learn something from that. And you have to be careful with that because, not everything goes well in science, and like sometimes we don't want to draw too much attention to things that don't go well. But it's also really valuable, I think, to have this kind of safe environment from time to time because, otherwise it becomes a culture of success only, only highlighting successes, while actually failures teach us something and help us become successful. Like there is no success which is not surrounded by failed attempts here and there.
Yep.
So we formed a ghost collective. It's an abbreviation for Games of Horror for Open Science Training. And it's not a clearly defined collective. The exact members change every year, but every year we try to come up with some fun game thingy for Halloween.
Okay.
Since pandemic, it was online. Like we had online escape rooms. We had the data horror escape room. We had an open science escape room. We had a software horror escape room. And this year we decided we have to go back to something. Something in person, something physical. So we created the Open Science Against Humanities. Open Science Against Humanity, which is of course cards against humanity, but then in the open science style.
Okay, well, that's very creative. That's really interesting. Yeah. Okay. So coming, you kind of made a brief comment about something earlier. Let's go back and touch on that again, because you were talking about the organization at the Free University. So maybe you could tell us a bit more, how is Open Science and RDM organized and delivered generally at the Free University? In addition to your own role as community manager, what are the other or some of the other roles and activities that in addition that are a part of the kind of Open Science and RDM offering or organization?
Yeah, so the way we see Open Science, it has three main pillars, responsible research, open education, and public engagement and impact. This is how the Open Science program is visualized at Vrije Universiteit Amsterdam. And then for each of the pillars, you could think of various activities that would involve, developing a policy, providing training, providing needed infrastructure. Of course, what is actually happening in the university is that there are already ongoing initiatives that touch upon various pillars. For example, there is a group that is working on science communication and public engagement. There was a lot of work done on recognition and rewards, which also has impact on how research is assessed. So in many cases, people working on open science try to connect together these ongoing initiatives and highlight to them that what they're doing also contributes to open science goals of the university, and that we can maybe strengthen each other. We do have colleagues who work specifically on open access, for example. I think that all university libraries would have people working specifically on that. Like we help researchers publish open access in various ways. We also stimulate a little bit some of the Diamond initiatives for open access publishing, when the author doesn't have to pay for publishing, so the money is coming from somewhere else. We also have people who specifically work on training, and they you know, they organize various trainings. They also try to see how we can embed some of the open science trainings in the education programs of the FIU. We have a lot of training specifically on research data management. We have we have a course on how to write a research data management plan that we encourage PhD students to take. This is a serious course. They, at the end, they write their own research data management plan. And
okay. All right. Well, so mostly just then you were talking about the open science side, but on the RDM side, you mentioned you have using training for using a DMP tool. I assume you have either an institutional repository or data repositories that you recommend to researchers to use. And earlier in the conversation, you were saying that you think of the infrastructure and the tools as being kind of an enabler for open science. So when you personally or the university think about these various tools and services, the DMP tool, the repository, other RDM, do you see them is there any attempt to see them as a series of integrated offering? Or do you merely say, well, here's your DMP, here's the repository, here's the storage, whatever, and, you know, they're all useful, but they're not really. Is there any vision for an integrated approach is really the question I'm asking.
So that's an interesting question, because the university has a vision, and some of my colleagues are actually working on integrating various tools together into one ecosystem. I have to say that I personally feel a bit, I'm not deeply involved in this project. So what I'm saying is maybe not very well informed, but I do feel certain skepticism about this kind of technical infrastructure for the university, just because of how quickly technology overtakes us. You know, what I see is that the technological changes are so rapid, while the university IT projects go so slowly, that probably by the time, you know, we finish this integration, this will all be outdated already. But I also feel that research is so diverse. There are like so many things that research in various disciplines involved, even from my experience in linguistics. Well, you know, the documentation of endangered languages was something very different from theoretical linguistics or experimental linguistics. So it feels that we only satisfy a very limited amount of needs, while a lot of researchers stay unsupported at all by these large interconnected infrastructures. I think personally we should provide as many options as possible, but not really to put too much effort into interconnecting them, unless we are a large tech company and we really have resources to do this. Mm.
Yeah, that's interesting. So one of the themes, one of the main themes I thought, which really struck me at the RDA last week, was the central role that PIDs and metadata are seen as playing in the future, and perhaps to some extent that's out of similar caution as you have about the ability to have a large integrated infrastructure. But if you're able to put PIDs on things and associate data with metadata, then even if the services aren't completely integrated, because you've got the PIDs, you could have discovery, which leads to more openness. So maybe that is a direction that's also beginning to happen. I know we said we wouldn't talk about PIDs, but since you said it, I couldn't resist mentioning it.
Topic. But there are also so many interesting initiatives that go beyond PIDs. For example, we talked to project called Decentralized Science, and they want to use hashes to, you know, to instead of PEDS. So it's also interesting if maybe this if maybe there will be something that would go beyond the existing publishing infrastructure.
Because
of course PEDS are important and sustainable because they are supported by all major publishers.
Yeah. Excellent. Okay. Well, listen, thank you. I think that's been great. Thank you so much. Really an interesting conversation, and appreciate your time. And it's always interesting. I always get, when I have these conversations, I always learn something new and see different perspectives. And that's definitely been the case today. So thank you very much.
Thank you so much for this opportunity. I really enjoyed it.
Okay, great. Thanks, Lena. So that's it for this episode. I hope you enjoyed the discussion. The Fair Data Podcast is provided by fairdatapodcast.org and produced by Mehroz Ahmed. You can find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Podcasts, and follow us on Twitter @Fair Data Podcast. See you next time.